trying to get your children to do something or not do something, trying to persuade your spouse, your customers, your colleagues, your boss. We're constantly negotiating with people every day in and out. And, you know, if you understand, you know, what makes people tick, why do they decide one way versus another? You can then obviously leverage this to your own advantage.
Entrepreneurs love talking about business. However, it's no secret there's also so many other things they love talking about, which are not about business. In the Sea of Business podcasts, none of your business is a refreshing break, a surprise kiss, an afternoon fizz. Through Carla's cheeky and radical takes on mundane and heavy topics, you'll gain fresh insights that guarantee you something to talk about on your first Tinder date, while visiting grandma, or if you want to impress your new boss. This fun and quirky podcast is sponsored by ScaleWind, outsourcing made smarter. Tired of business podcasts? Tune in to None of Your Business. New episodes weekly.
All right, good morning and welcome to another episode of None of Your Business. So for today, we have another special guest. His name is Uli. He's actually one of my super close friends for years and years and years. Dr. Uli Isserlo is the founder of Big Boost Marketing. It's one of the leading marketing minds in the integrative and functional medicine space. He's advised many of today's leaders on strategy and tech implementation. Uli's patient attraction strategies are responsible for millions of dollars in revenue and have generated tens of thousands of patient leads, including multi-million dollar online summits. He's a frequent guest on podcasts, online summits, and a sought-after speaker on the topic of functional medicine marketing. So that industry really blew up over the pandemic. Now people want the truth. People want better, you know, healers and doctors and experts. So after 10 years in the pharmaceutical industry, Uli founded Big Boost Marketing, an award-winning digital marketing agency specializing in automated marketing systems and Facebook advertising for health and wellness professionals. Hey, Uli, how are you?
Great, great. Thanks for having me on your podcast. Always good catching up. And I love that you have so many different topics that you cover. So I'm excited to jam on all things persuasion and what will come our way.
Yeah, absolutely. So for today's episode, Uli actually has a great podcast called Getting to Yes. And with his experience selling marketing services to his clientele and then selling his client services to their clientele, he actually has a lot of experience in marketing, persuasion. So that is what we will be discussing today. And this is also kind of a selfish topic for me because I love this topic too. And I will also share some stories that you guys probably don't know yet about me. So Uli, what is persuasion to you and how do you encounter this in your day-to-day life?
Yeah. Yeah. One of the things that really fascinate me is how does the brain make decisions? And, you know, coming from sort of like a technical science background as an engineer, you know, there's sort of an ulterior motive that, you know, if I could understand how the brain makes decision, I could change the input and then influence the brain to do something that I wanted to do. And so obviously that's super important for ourselves when we motivate ourselves. So one of the questions is, why do we procrastinate or why do some people procrastinate all the time? Why do they not make a decision? And how do they get stuck in doing what they know is actually right for their business, for their life, for their health, and not take action? So that's where it all started. And the question I asked myself, how do I get to yes faster? You know, get to yes for myself, doing the things that I should be doing in business and life, but also how do I help persuade my clients or my consumers or customers to decide to buy my product or other people's products. And so that's the origin where this whole topic of getting to yes started. And you know, if I go back a step, I got really my start in, as you said, in the science industry. I worked in big pharma for 10 years. specifically in Alzheimer's research. So at the time, we're trying to figure out, okay, how do you stop Alzheimer's? How does the brain deteriorate, and what can you do to preserve cognitive function? And so this is where I then started to realize, from a sort of persuasion and marketing angle, there's a lot to be learned there. How does the brain actually operate? And, you know, again, everyone knows these books from Robert Cialdini, Persuasion, etc. There's so many other books about persuasion and influence out there. But now that we understand how neuroscience works, brain scanners, etc., we have so much more data to really test how the brain ticks.
Yeah, absolutely. That is kind of like a playground, right? Like the human brain is like a playground, and it's fun to explore it. In my, I loved all of the books and the resources that you mentioned. Personally, my favorite is Dan Ariely. He is known as like the father, quote unquote, of modern behavioral economics. And he started really making that term famous, like behavioral economics. And I was really curious. I first read his book in like 2015, Predictably Irrational, where he just explained how people are irrational. And I just bought every book he put out there. And for me, that was also how I developed my interest in it. And it was because I loved observing humans, because humans are so fascinating.
Yeah, absolutely. And I believe that, beyond public speaking, mastering persuasion is probably one of the most critical skills in life, because we persuade all the time, whether it's, if you have children, trying to get your children to do something or not do something, trying to persuade your spouse, your customers, your colleagues, your boss. We're constantly negotiating with people every day in and out. And, if you understand, what makes people tick, why do they decide one way versus another, you can then obviously leverage this to your own advantage. Or, in the case of the doctors that I work with, the biggest obstacle is we all know what's important for people to get healthy, but the patient doesn't want to do it. So how do you persuade the patient to do something that's in their best interest and decide to get healthy, right? And a lot of people think health starts the moment they sign up as with a practitioner and then go into the treatment protocols. But I believe the healing journey really starts the moment they decide to get healthy. And so I think healing starts on social media, because unless a person decides they want to get healthier, they want to work out, they want to, get leaner, they want to drop the weight, nothing is ever going to change. So even before they work with a doctor, they have to decide for themselves that, okay, I've had enough. It's time to get serious about health and do it. And so I think there's really a societal benefit to understanding persuasion so that more consumers, more people in the world do what's right for them.
I love that. I love that. Yes. I'm curious about the thing that you shared about doctors having to persuade their clients to be healthier and to commit. So there is that initial agreement between the doctor and the patient to do something about their health. How do these doctors convince the patient to be accountable, to be consistent, and to take that commitment? I'm really, really curious.
Yeah, it's a super big challenge, because most consumers, most patients, they just know the conventional medical model, which is you go to a doctor when you're sick, and the doctor will give you a pill and says, come back in 3 weeks if you're not feeling better. And so this is totally devoid of accountability or any of the things that actually, feed into long-term health. So I believe the shifts that these doctors need to make is really understanding that, hey, health is not what happens at the doctor's appointment when you're sick. Health is what you need to do when you just go through daily life. It's what happens between appointment that's probably the most important aspect of creating health. And then obviously there's different scenarios. One, you're in trouble, the car is in a ditch. And then how do you get the car out of the ditch? That's part number one. And then once the car is out of the ditch, how do you fix it up that it keeps running smoothly and looks good? And so I think health coaches have a huge role in helping modulate and persuade clients to stay the course. And the big thing is really tying it to the big outcome. You know, why are we doing this beyond just getting healthy? You know, what's the point behind being healthy? So it really expands the role of the clinician to not only be the person delivering the treatment option and strategizing the treatment, but you have to really, you know, have them buy into the bigger vision, why they want to get healthy, and, you know, unearth their why to get healthy in the first place.
Yeah, no, I love that, because I feel like people really have different motivations on getting healthy. You have these stories about, you know, like, oh, I got this uncle who died early and it was just so heartbreaking. So there are people with like really heavy reasons like that. And there are people who are like, oh, I just want to look good in the dress that I want to buy. And that's their motivation. It's not shallow or anything. It's just a different motivation. So in your experience, what role do you provide? Do you also like coach the doctor to help their clients to get to that kind of ongoing commitment?
Yeah. You know, ultimately, when you look at sort of the work from Cialdini and Robert Granger, he has like 7 triggers for yes. There's really 9 persuasion prompts that apply to anything. Doesn't matter what your vertical is, where you are, but there's 9 prompts that the human brain uses to get to an effortless yes. And just, you know, evolutionary speaking, there's 2 key principles. Number 1, the brain is there to keep you safe. So it scans the environment for threats and saying, ooh, this is, you know, potentially dangerous. Don't do it. You know, stay conservative. Do what you know is going to keep you safe. And then the second function of the brain is really helping the body preserve energy. So the brain uses 40% of the body's energy. So it's constantly, so again, evolutionary speaking, how do I waste less energy on the, you know, the brain in terms of burning calories? And so are there some decisions that are easier where I can just say yes without really burdening my cognitive machine to think yes or no? And so in today's world, you know, we're bombarded with decisions, where, you know, with stimuli, there's more than 40,000 micro decisions that we make, walking down the steps, getting in the car, brushing our teeth. And so there's this brain constantly decides, okay, I don't need to think about this, you know, just say yes, put the clothes on, do the regular routines, etc. And then obviously for certain areas where it's like, ooh, this is dangerous, don't do it. Mm-hmm. But it ultimately boils down to 9 persuasion prompts, where if you know these prompts, you can then say, okay, rather than saying it this way, say it that way, and that will make it so much more likely that the brain just, you know, subconsciously says yes to it, moving on. And so the one of the most prominent one is obviously authority. And, you know, Cialdini and others have long recognized this for you know, hundreds of years. Just empirically that, you know, when you look at a doctor, you subconsciously defer to what the doctor said. The doctor went to medical school, residency, spends 10 years mastering the craft. We don't have to question a doctor why they say what they say. We just say the doctor says X, Y, Z, and you follow along. Same with accountants and lawyers. You know, you're not questioning the lawyer why you're doing the lawsuit or the proceeding this way versus another way. That's their area of expertise. And so we defer to authority. And so, you know, anytime you want to influence somebody, if you can invoke some form of authority, makes your life so much easier, because the brain wants to save energy and says, oh, this person is an authority, let's just go along with what they say. So that's, you know, probably one of the most widely used, easily implemented strategies to get people to say yes. But there's many others that people use. You know, another one is, for instance, social proof. You know, rather than deciding for yourself, should I do this or not? It's like, well, look at these 1,000 people that all have done this. They all give it 5-star reviews. That must be a safe decision. So again, the brain says, I don't have to think about it, whether I want it or not. 1,000 people have said yes. I should say yes too. And so, you know, when you see all these prompts in this light, you know, in as a way for the brain to save energy or keep you safe, then it's a lot easier to construct, you know, how you should verbalize something or communicate something so that people actually do what they need to do. And so in the context of healthcare, training these doctors to recognize what is it that their patients really want, and how do you leverage authority, social proof, and any of the other 9 persuasion prompts. That's what we do. And ultimately, that's our contribution to making these doctors more successful with their practices.
I love that. And it's such a noble thing to persuade for too. I love that ultimately your work gets to contribute to people being more healthy, living longer, enjoying their lives more. I know you do a lot of work with like perimenopausal women, like hormone therapy and all that. And this is like often forgotten. So I love that we're talking about persuasion with a bigger mission in mind. And, I've had functional medicine people guest on this podcast. And so for our listeners here who want to learn more about health, check out my other episodes that talk about sleep, health, eating healthy and eating without feeling guilty or, something like that. So let's go back to, persuasion and your experience with negotiation and stuff like that. Can you share with us the biggest like negotiation of your life, and how did you feel? What happened and what did you learn from it?
Yeah, ultimately, again, this goes back to 2012, where fresh out of the big pharma industry, I thought, oh, we should, build a health product that gets people to be healthier. And so the idea is build, a line of barbecue sauces that's the healthiest on the market and get people to, to cook more at home. And because they cook more at home, they lose more weight, and that's why they're healthier. So that was the idea. And instead of trying to persuade people to be healthier, so if this is my real world marketing MBA, what I didn't account for is that barbecue sauces are the slowest moving item in the store. How many barbecue sauces do you buy unless you're really into barbecuing? Maybe 1 or 2 bottles a year. And then if you buy more bottles, you buy the bottle that you already know, like, and trust, right? So you're not experimenting with your barbecue sauce. It's the same with toothpaste, right? So that was sort of a real eye-opener that maybe right idea, but then wrong execution, because you really didn't account for how people make decisions. Ultimately, the realization is, okay, the people that are already healthy, they already cook at home, so they're not necessarily buy the healthiest barbecue sauces. And the people that need to lose more weight, well, they're probably not cooking at home. That's why they're overweight. And so it was like, couple things where I didn't really think this through, how to sell a product. In this case, it was a physical product to an audience and really beta test it. And so I think that was for me the inspiration. Before you launch a product, you should have a beta test. You should figure out, do people really want what you have before you fully commit to spend the big bucks and make it work. And ultimately, if you don't get this decision right, then doesn't matter how much marketing spend you have, how much ad spend, if it's a shitty product or it's a shitty proposition, then people will not buy it. And, the marketing costs will be astronomical. And so then you ultimately run out of money. So this is, where things started for me, where I did get it wrong. But now it's really the inspiration that every time you launch a product or you look at somebody, how do you pitch or persuade in the marketplace, really think this through all the way, test it, and then realize, okay, people are following along, or I have to make more tweaks. And I think this goes back to my engineering mindset, that I like to sort of change the inputs and then see what happens and make it better and better until you hit sort of the right numbers. And a big part of this is really gut intuition as well. It's like oftentimes it needs to sound like this. And it's maybe hard for you to put in words why you feel it needs to sound like this, but I think this is what makes people that are very persuasive, why they're so powerful, because they intuitively can feel how they have to activate these 9 persuasion prompts and layer it into their presentations and into their marketing and, into their one-on-one interaction as well.
Yeah, I love that. So your biggest kind of negotiation project was also kind of like one of your biggest lessons in business. So whatever you feel like you spent or lost in that venture, it's kind of just like tuition for learning
yeah.
a really important lesson.
Yeah, I call it my $324,000 MBA. And, you know, life saving sucked into it. But, you know, you come back from this. And I think every entrepreneur, any business person has had these near-death experiences where you came so close to bankruptcy, you know, everything imploded. And you learned a lesson from this and you came back stronger. And ultimately, that becomes your, you know, your gold nugget, that, you know, the thing that, you know, changed your life for the better and that you can then use to leverage other people's life as well so that they don't have to make the same mistakes, right? Bring it back to all these health professionals. A lot of them, as you said, they have, just like consumers, had their own health challenges, and that usually becomes the, you know, the starting point for them saying, hey, this is why I'm so passionate about this topic, because I suffered from autoimmune disease, or I went through cancer, and I don't want other people to have to figure this out on their own. And I think that's the hero's journey. You know, that's what we use in marketing all the time, that, you know, ultimately you become a product of your own product. You figured it out. You broke through all the challenges, and now you make that available to your audiences without all the challenges.
Yeah, no, I love that. There's a saying that says, features tell and stories sell, right? Mm-hmm. So I feel like if someone has a really big mission in what they're doing, especially with such a great passion or venture as health, you know, and helping people become healthy, your story is really what may also inspire other people to do better. Because for the girl who just wanted to fit into a dress, now after she hears your story, she might think, oh, wow, actually, you know, I also want to someday have healthy kids and have a healthy pregnancy when I decide to be a mother. And then it becomes so much bigger for them. And that is a plus points for you, plus karma points for you.
Yeah, a big part is that in today's world, there's so much information out there. You know, life is infinitely more complex compared to before the internet. And so people's brain are really cognitively challenged that, you know, you could almost say that compared to before COVID, our brains are so much worse off because we were so much more on Zoom, so much more online, etc. And so the brain, you know, the number one thing I would, you know, say is like, make sure that you preserve your brain's resilience and saying, okay, any decision that you don't have to make, that you can streamline, that allows you to deploy that energy somewhere else. And so there's so much overwhelm in the world. So then when you have stories that really resonate, that's the vehicle that gets through the noise, and that makes your, you know, teaching points so much stickier, so that, you know, as you tell the stories, obviously you weave these persuasion prompts into it, and then you have the vehicle of the storytelling plus, you know, what really sort of fast tracks decision making all in one vehicle.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think also when we pressure ourselves as marketing people, when we help our clients do marketing or sales, we kind of sometimes get lost in this, what do we need to tell them? What do we need to say? But we forget that maybe we need to just listen more. And this kind of ties to what you said about preserving your brain's resilience. Maybe I don't need to brainstorm with another marketing coach about what I'm going to do next. Maybe I can just listen to my clients more. So I train, you know, sales teams and appointment setters in my company. And one of the things that we do when we are getting to know a client is we go on Reddit, we go on Quora boards and see what our clients are thinking and saying, and, you know, involving that in like the sales script and how we are going to talk to our clients. And it helps using their words, using their experiences, not necessarily your story now. You can use their story to persuade them into what you want them to do.
Yeah, it's actually one of my biggest pet peeves that marketers, a lot of sort of entry-level marketers, they talk about the product and the practitioner and whoever created the product. And it's like, no, you got to focus on what your customer, your patient wants. doesn't matter who you are, what you have, and why. It's like they just need to know how it's benefiting them. So I love what Perry Belcher is doing. It's like his copywriting is really going after what are these deep motivations? You know, why do you want to fit into that dress? Why do you want to look good when you go to this event? And it's all about them. It's never about you as the business owner, the business. And so oftentimes I see people saying they don't hire a marketing agency. Okay, let me put my website together and I talk all about my services and the features. And I'm like, talk about the benefits, talk about why it's relevant to them, and just get rid of all the stuff about how you do it. Nobody cares how the sausage is made. They just want to know what's the outcome. And it's oftentimes a higher level outcome. It's not just the immediate being healthier or fitting in this dress, but you know, it's you showing up, looking and feeling your best and rocking it and being in that environment. And so I think, you know, as you said with your team, digging into what patients and consumers want, that's where it all starts and begins. That's where it ends. And, you know, I think that's what you and I have to teach more people, that take a focus on the consumer. That's the only person that matters.
Yeah. And I also remember this episode on your podcast, actually, that I liked. And you were talking to this guy about conversational selling and how, you know, the easiest way to sell something is to just have a conversation with your best friend. You genuinely wanting you operating on their best interest and wanting the best for them. And that's why I tell my salespeople and setters, like, if you feel like they don't need it, don't sell them the product. Like, you may get the commission now, but that client might be unhappy, or they will refund. They will threaten to leave a bad review. They won't like you. It's just all downside. Or at the end of the day, it's bad karma points. It's like, even if they're nice enough to not write us a bad review or whatever, and they'll just say, oh, I'm canceling. Like, it's just not a nice thing to do. So, you know, so in business, we have this saying, first dollar is the hardest. What would be your advice to people who are just starting to sell, just starting to learn persuasion, just starting their own side hustle so that they can get to yes faster?
Yeah, absolutely agree with this. And ultimately, it comes down to the speed of building trust, that the faster you can build trust, that no like trust factor, that the faster it is to get anywhere meaningful. So obviously what precedes that first dollar is conversations that connect. You know, there's all this marketing automation, and I'm a marketing technology. So yes, this is one of the things that I push, but I believe you can't just automate everything. This is like monologue. You're out there by email, text messaging, you're screaming at people, you're yelling. And ultimately, what really makes a sale is shifting from monologues to dialogues, that you have a real conversation about their needs, what's going on in their life, and showing them how your solution can help them. And then ultimately, decision is theirs. So you can't force anybody to make a decision that they don't want to do. You shouldn't. Ultimately, you can just open the door, invite them in. And then if they see this is legit, this makes sense to me, then they will walk through the door. And so I think, you know, focusing on establishing that trust, what is it that makes people say yes, you know, using the 9 prompts, getting them on your mailing list, getting into conversation, the faster you get into conversations and get to become somebody meaningful in their life, that paves the way for the first dollar. And then obviously, you know, connected to first dollar is the hardest is, you know, once you have existing clients, keep them happy, reduce churn. That's the easiest money you will ever make because they already have a relationship with you. They love you already. So just keep loving them, keep wowing them. So that's the other part. Once you have a customer, it's much smarter to keep that person happy because it requires less energy than constantly find new clients and start this relationship building process from scratch. And so this is, I guess, where monthly recurring revenue is so powerful, that it's predicated on the idea you made somebody spend their first dollar, you keep them happy, you keep delivering value. That's the easiest business model there is, to just collecting from the people that already know, like, and trust you.
Right, absolutely. You know, we hear about this know, like, and trust ladder so many times. I want to add a new one, so that most people, actually most prospects, stay in the like part of it so long. We have clients that would message me, hey, I need a virtual assistant. And then they would message me on Facebook, and then I scroll up and apparently they also needed a virtual assistant 3 years ago or 2 years ago. But they either they tried other things and it wasn't successful, but they still like me and I was still at the back of their heads. And I continued to make those conversations, even though they were kind of one-sided because it's copy, mm-hmm. you know, unless they interact with my posts. But I think a lot of entrepreneurs listening right now, you should remember that a lot of your prospects are sitting in that like space. This is like the no is probably like an arena, and then the like is like the VIP section. And then mm-hmm. they sit on that VIP section for such a long time before they proceed to like get a backstage pass and actually work with you. And so whatever you can invest in that like stage, I would say, you know, do it. And I think it's the same. You know, we're delving a little bit and talking about business now, which is against the rules, just kidding. But even if you're getting to know a person, right, you don't immediately, you know, when you choose your spouse, you don't immediately decide to marry them so early. You kind of stay in that area where you really like each other and you like spending so much time with each other before you get to yes, the yes that matters.
Yeah. I mean, the easiest yes is the one that people sell themselves into. So, you know, if you can make, this is why I like the movie Inception, you know, you get people to believe it was their idea all along. And right. then, you know, there's nothing more powerful than that when your spouse or your girlfriend or your kids believe it was their ideas and you just gently maybe tee this up for them. But that's how you get to the most powerful decisions, where people feel, well, this is what I really want, this was my idea, and then they're really sticking with it. So going back to what you're saying before about how do you get people to you know, stay healthy or stay with their current health regime, going to the gym, being consistent, it's tapping into their own story and connecting to them. So absolutely.
Yeah. And whatever, like, there's no such thing as like a shallow motivation if the destination you're heading towards is ultimately a good thing for you. So it's fine if you want to just be, you know, lose weight to fit into a dress. It's fine if you want to lose weight to look better on your Tinder photos or something like that. Like, I'm just revealing my own self here, but except for the Tinder part. But, you know, like, I feel like if people also, when they're trying to negotiate or persuade someone, if there is a worthy outcome, that should be also enough motivation for you to make this thing yeah. work.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. You mentioned developing an intuition for better persuasion. How do you improve, say, how you absorb information? How do you improve this intuition?
I think it starts, like with anything, with having the awareness. Mm-hmm. What are sort of the categories to sort of think about? And so, again, regardless which book you read, Cialdini or, you know, Russell Granger, you know, knowing just here's the broad categories, you see these patterns over and over again. And, you know, when you see a situation, then it's easy saying, oh, this is just another form of XYZ. And then it's a lot easier to, you know, put it into context and then remember to do it. So what I find is that when we take clients to these 9 persuasion prompts, like, they're usually good in 2 or 3. And then they probably have 4 or 5 that they don't even aren't even aware of. And so, you know, just creating that awareness, saying, hey, you need to focus more on this. Once they know, it's a lot easier to recognize, oh, I could use this. They're let's say at the ice cream store, and then they notice something that the ice cream store does. And I'm like, okay, I can apply this in, you know, my life as well. And so I think that's where it all starts. That's how you hone it. And, you know, reading about the books, I like Russell Granger's 7 Triggers to Yes, because It's an easy read. It's very conversational. It's not too sciencey, but it really incorporates a lot of the, you know, latest finding from the last 10 years from neuroimaging, from PET scanners, you know, actual real data and not just empirical data from the consumer products industry from the 1950s and 60s, how, let's say, cars were sold. And so, you know, I like this new angle because it really ties it now to physiological processes in everybody's brain, keeping you safe, saving energy. And, you know, that's how, where I would say people should start to learn more about persuasion.
Yeah, no, I love that. I think people also sometimes forget that to be able to persuade someone, you have to listen more to what they say. In my experience, growing the last company that I co-founded and I still own, is we grew our business from zero to a seven-figure company in a little over a year without ads. But I was the only person getting on the sales calls because I wanted to hear it from my customer's mouth. What's their motivation and what's their story, basically? And I always found that in your, say, 15 to 30 minute conversation with a client, or maybe even not with a client, on a date or whatever, there's always that one line that gives away everything that you need to know. And I feel like developing your intuition with the tips that you shared, and we'll get into the 9 prompts too. I feel like I think you have a resource for that that could really help a lot of people, and I want them to get their hands on that resource. But I feel like the more you develop your intuition, it gets easier to find this one line that they will say that gives everything away. And that's how I teach my setters too. Like, find that, you know, it will come out. Like, it's not like you're trapping them or something, but the more you ask them the right questions and lead them to really revealing their real motivation, you will find it, you know?
Yeah, I totally agree. And, you know, ultimately, every sales call, doesn't matter if you get a yes or no, you will learn something about what motivates people to say yes, right? And even if you couldn't get to a no faster, you know, ultimately, the fastest way to get more yes is, you know, get more no's. That, you know, okay, what has people say no, change the product, and then you will get more yes. So, you know, it's the maybes in the middle where the appointment setter or the salesperson didn't get to the root of the issue, the real why, the real motivation, why people decide one way or another. And maybe it's not telling you anything. It has you stuck in nowhere's land. And so if you get a yes, then you know, okay, this is the feature that moved them forward. If they say no, you also know why they didn't move forward. But either of those outcomes help you create a better scenario, better setup, that either you know who to talk to more and who's not a good fit, or you can change the product that makes it more desirable. It's more in line, addresses their objections. But anytime a setter is sort of stuck with a maybe, that's costing a business money. Because, you know, exactly. You keep following up and you're not getting anywhere. So the faster you can get to a yes or no, you know, yes, make you money. No's, save you money. The maybes are the ones that cost you money.
Yeah, I love that. That's a good thing to remember. I was on this call the other day with another service provider, and it was pretty fascinating how the salesperson dealt with the conversation. She said, by the way, if you want this, let me know. If not, you know, you can let me know, but I will not follow up. This is up for you to decide. And if I don't hear from you for 5 days, I'm just going to assume that as a no. So I thought that was pretty interesting, a pretty interesting approach. I don't know if it was a positioning thing or whatever, but I mean, I ended up not getting the product, but also, what did you think was going on there? Did you think she was just like trying to save her energy, or?
No, I think ultimately, if done right, people, you know, salespeople or good salespeople know this, and I feel everyone should know this. Ultimately, when we're marketing things, it's not our role to decide, right? We can't decide for people. We can't want it more than them. There's no convincing, cajoling, arm twisting. This is what ethical marketing is about. They have to decide that this is in their best interest at this time. And if it is, great. If not, you have to respect this. There's nothing you can say or do to make them decide otherwise. This is not, you know, this is the difference between convincing, where you're trying to impose your vision on them and you're trying to pull a fast one and get them to part with their money, only to be unhappy later, versus persuading. Persuasion is you provide the environment for them to get to an effortless yes, for them to feel intuitively, this is what I want, this is what's good for me, this is what I want to invest in at this time. And so as a marketer, all you can do is change the environment that they're in, what they experience about your product, that it is as desirable as it can be, but recognize ultimately it's their right to say yes or no. You just try to move them to the point where they feel comfortable enough to say yes, or they say no, and obviously, you know, avoid the maybe. And, you know, this can happen in a 20 or 30 minute call. But if you get to a hard no, perfectly fine. There's no reason why I would need to follow up with a person if that person is really, you know, sticking with their no. Now, as a salesperson or an appointment setter, if you feel that this is a pretext, that it's really a smokescreen, it's not a real no, then obviously you have to keep digging. But if you come to sort of the end of the road, to the end of the call, and you know it's a firm no, then there's probably nothing more you can do. Just move on and save your energy, I would say.
Yeah, and I think the other kind of layer to this too is some people know what they need and they actually want what you're selling, but they have an unresolved relationship with money. And this is another topic altogether, right? But I've noticed that, and I've noticed this with myself too. There's some things that I know are good for me and I know that I need and want, but sometimes I can't get myself to spend the money, even if I have the money. And then I just go into kind of studying how I behave like I behaved. And I realize, you know, recently I have been learning more about our relationship with money. You know, I grew up in a poor country and it's different the way we view money with, you know, with other people who grew somewhere else or had a more abundant life growing up. So sometimes, you know, the circumstance that is obvious is not probably also the only thing holding people back. And this applies to any decision in life. You know, Uli and I are just using business as an example, but even in life, if, you know, if you don't get someone's buy-in, or if you're trying to, like he says, cajole them, trying to convince them into getting you something by just, I don't know, exhausting them. I did this to my parents when I was a kid. I would be like, Mom, I really want ice cream. Can we have ice cream after church? And they're like, no, it's bad for you. It's sugar. And I'm like, please. And honestly, I would get my ice cream just because they're so exhausted by saying no. So obviously that is not a good persuasion tactic when you're growing up. You can't just do that to a spouse, a partner, any grown up.
Yeah, I think one of the things that as humans, we all want to feel positive about how we conduct ourselves in life. And, you know, when you realize it, then you realize that all these negotiations in life with your spouse, with your kids, with your colleagues, etc., you know, it all comes down to, you know, what's best for them. You know, if I'm a true friend to them, a true partner, what's the right thing for me to do or say, and to push them towards, and they have to be comfortable with that decision. So just knowing, you know, how far you should push or encourage, or, you know, when to lay off. And it's like, okay, is this battle worth fighting about, you know, ice cream? You know, I can resonate with your parents. It's like, you know, an occasional ice cream is not going to kill anyone. So let's just, you know, make this part and parcel of the journey, and not be so like have to win every battle in life and always come out on top. Sometimes you just have to do the right thing. And maybe that means you're not taking somebody's money. You're not winning the battle. And, you know, ultimately, you just can hold your head up high, sleep soundly at night, and say it's like, you know, I'm living ethically. I live, you know, focusing on the right things in life. I have gratitude, and I don't need to win every, you know, decision, every persuasion match, if you will.
Yeah, no, I love that. Because sometimes we feel bad when someone says no to us and we feel like it's an attack or am I not trustworthy? You know, you're right. Like if someone also on the other side, you know, you want the best for them, you operate on their best interest. But on the other side, that person you're trying to convince, they are also operating in their best interest. So when they say no to you, like it's fine. Maybe in that moment, they weren't able to see what you were seeing. But if you also operate with good intention, then all is good in the world. So as parting words, this has been a really great conversation, Uli. And thank you so much for gracing us with your time. What are some of the day-to-day habits that someone can develop to improve themselves in persuasion, negotiation, developing intuition, even if they're starting at zero? What can they do from this day forward?
Yeah, I think I would start with really creating more awareness and sort of understanding, you know, you alluded to behavioral economics. I'm a big fan of this too. Just listen more and pay attention to why people do what they do. And maybe this is, you know, you review at the end of the day, your day, and you look at, you know, why did I get a no here? What was behind that decision? What could have impacted the decision? And just sort of thinking through the whole process, not from your perspective, how did it feel to get the no, but it's like, what made them say no in the first place? You know, what could have been going on in their life that would make them say no? That's a great way to sort of like shift the focus again on the person that we're connecting with. And ultimately, you know, by understanding why they reacted the way they did, we're then able to engineer maybe a different scenario, a different context that would get them to say yes. So again, if somebody is, you know, everyone says I'm, you know, deciding based on logic, I think that's never the case. The brain is so much more powerful. It always decides on emotion. It goes back to past memory, you know, memories of past experiences, you know, times when you feel bad or when you feel good, and the brain makes decision in that context that it's like, oh, I want more of the feel good, you know, experiences and less of the experiences where I felt hurt. So just thinking through every day, you know, what made people tick, you know, what's behind the scenes is a powerful way to get started, to become more persuasive. And as you said, more listening than talking. You know, you can't understand how people tick if you're the one talking all the time, because you're missing the most important clues. And this is where books like, let's say, FBI Hostage Negotiators, there's so much you can learn from, you know, what people reveal when you let them talk. And I think, you know, how to really listening in a world that never stops talking, that's, I think, the key skill.
I love that. Yeah, you mentioned the FBI Negotiator. I love that book, Never Split the Difference. Mm-hmm. Chris Voss. Oh my God. I've moved like houses 4 times. I always buy that book again and again.
Well, I was at a conference recently and there was a speaker talking about nonverbal language. And she said, you know what? I've been in this business for 4 decades. And last year I went to the FBI citizen school. And she said, what I learned there on site with the FBI about how to read humans was so freaking eye-opening, that people tell you what's going on even without words. You can see it in their facial expression, in the shrugs. And so again, this is where, you know, Chris Voss's book and you know, what the FBI is teaching is really powerful when it comes to persuasion, or, you know, persuasion and obviously understanding how people operate. That's really the key to master.
Yeah, I love that. And as a out of this world, like out of the box, not out of this world, as an out of the box tip or a pursuit that I would also love everyone to try out is, if you have kids that are in college or in high school, convince them to join the debate team. I was a part of our debate team. I did competitive debate for 3 years in college. I was actually the president, so hashtag nerd, of the debate club. And debate is actually the art of and science of persuasion. And you have a topic and both of you are right. You just have to convince the adjudicator which one is the better solution to the problem. So common debate topics such as abortion, legalizing prostitution, legalizing marijuana, you know, turning a republic into a federal, you know, government. So these are the normal topics that people debate about. But the pros and the cons, they're both correct. And usually they're both trying to solve the same problem. And you will see that the difference really is how good these people persuade. So we were also taught, you know, when I was training to be a debater, we were taught about the little body language stuff. Like if your hand gestures are showing a thumbs up, you know, like that's a good thing. If you're showing your wrist, that means you're kind of open and transparent, being transparent with them. And like things like that. So you'll actually learn a lot about persuasion. If you have kids that are in that age, or if there's a university close to you, try to be a guest in the debate classes, the debate trainings. I would think that is good. And the other out of the box tip is try to play poker. You will see the littlest signs of people lying, people trying to get one over you. And you might get a little nervous when you're starting because there's money involved. But, you know, try to join a tournament and just study people and don't talk. And then you learn a lot about humans that way. So that would be my tip for everyone listening.
I love that story about poker because, you know, obviously there's something illicit or illegal about it. Not really, but it's not what most people do. And as you said, you learn so much about, you know, other humans, how they express and communicate. And yeah, I think that's a good note to end and this interview.
Thank you. Well, this has been super awesome. Thank you so much, Uli. Where can we find your work, your podcast? Please tell us. I'm sure a lot of my listeners would love to follow you and see all the exciting things you're doing.
Yeah. We have certainly, I mentioned the 9 persuasion prompts for an effortless yes a number of times. So that's at uli.isalo.com. And I'm everywhere on social at uliisalo. So lots of ways to follow me. And as I said, I'm a big nerd about neuroscience, about what gets people to say yes. And I believe that's applicable to all kinds of situations in life, you know, among public speaking. I think persuasion is one of the most powerful and profitable skills to have. So always worth investing into that arena.
Okay, sounds good. Well, thank you so much, Uli, and I'll see you around. I'm happy to have this conversation with you, and I want it to be 3 hours longer, but we'll always have these conversations anyway. So thank you. Thank you so much.
Pleasure to be here.
All right. Bye.
So it's a wrap. To my entrepreneur friends, I hope that you found this episode interesting and enjoyable. I know I did. Big thanks to our sponsor, Scalewind, for making this possible. If you need to outsource anything in your business so you can scale fast and easy, visit scalewind.com and check out their solutions. If there's any topic that you want to request, feel free to reach out. I only have 2 conditions. You tell me why you find it interesting, and you promise it's not business talk. Find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube, and leave us a comment or review because you're cool like that. This is your host, Carla, and thank you so much for joining me. Thank you for your interest in fun stories. Now we can get back to business. See you next week. And remember, everything here is none of your business.